You know, I know it's the first session in the morning, and I expect some people will come dribbling in as we start, but we are limited in the amount of time we have, so it might be good for us to get started. Let me welcome you all here. This is the session on the Academic Health Department Learning Community, just to make sure you're in the right place. We have no financial relationships to disclose, unfortunately, I guess. And here's what we're hoping to do today. I'm Bill Keck, right now chairing the Council on Linkages and chairing also the Academic Health Department Learning Community. We're intending today to try to introduce you all to the Academic Health Department Learning Community and what it means. Let me ask how many of you are members of the learning community? Just a few. Okay, good. Well, that's really good. I'm glad to have some folks here who haven't interacted with us much before. So we'll tell you a little bit about the academic health departments and the learning community and what we're intending to do. And then our intent, depending on how many are here and who is here, is to spend some time in discussion with you. We thought for those who are new to the idea, who want to talk about how to establish an academic health department, what some of the issues are associated with that, we'd try to get together in a small group with you. For others of you who may be at a much more sophisticated level of development, or talking about residencies or affiliation agreements or other issues related to expanding or furthering academic health department use, we spend time there, perhaps even talking about what the academic health department learning community might be able to do to help with the new public health in terms of interacting with our primary care peers in the future. And then for those who might be more interested in how the academic health department learning community actually works and what it might be able to provide for you, we'd have a separate session. But if it turns out that we really can't appropriately break up into those sessions, we'll just take on a session of the whole and deal with whatever questions you have and try to have a good roundtable discussion. So we'll see how many others come in and what they'd like to do as we go ahead. If we do have separate discussions, then we'll come back together and try to share what the findings from those discussions were and then talk about what some of the future steps might be for the learning community, because we're now in our second year with the learning community. We've gotten to the point, I think, where we now have established the community to some degree. We've done some description and cataloging. But really, the major question for us now is how can we use it to not only advance the idea of academic health departments, but actually impact what's going on in the public health world and in an era of health reform. So, see how that goes. So, let me just go ahead and tell you a little bit about the learning community itself. Learning community is part of the Council on Linkages between Academia and Public Health Practice, which is staffed by the Public Health Foundation, and we have the two primary staff members here, Ron Bialik in the front, president, Kathleen Amos in the back, who is our primary staff support person. So you want to get familiar with them and learn their email addresses, especially Kathleen's. The Council on Linkages has been around about 20 years now, and it's in place in order to do what it can to improve public health practice, education, and research, and we do that in three sort of primary ways. One, of course, is to foster, coordinate, develop linkages between academia and practice, and public health community and the healthcare community. We try to develop and advance strategies that build and strengthen public health infrastructure, and I won't go into them all now, but there are a number of products available for any of you who might be interested in this. And we are involved in creating a process for continuing public health education throughout one's career. And you see that Council is made up of representatives of the 19 national public health organizations listed on the right, and we're very pleased to be funded by both the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Health Resources and Services Administration, CDC and HRSA. So here's how we sort of define what this learning community is. It's a group of professionals learning about developing, maintaining, and expanding academic health departments. Our members, by and large, are practitioners, educators, and it should be and or researchers, because some people fit all three of these titles, some fit just one or two. It's a somewhat eclectic mix, but certainly has a wide representation across the country. As you can see, we're close to 200 signed-on members now. They represent 40 states, six national organizations, and the District of Columbia. And I think there are a few territories involved here, too. Most of the people do work in public health practice, so the majority are practitioners. And what we're trying to do is get this group together to really explore what the academic health department concept is, and to further clarify it, define it, and figure out how best to make use of it. So we encourage, through this group, knowledge sharing and collaboration around the issue of academic health department development, maintenance, and expansion. And we've been tasked with trying to define what an academic health department is. As you know, it's that old saw, if you've seen one academic health department, well, then you've seen one. Because while there are some characteristics that we'll discuss briefly that are shared across them, really they are environment dependent. Each of our local environments varies, and so we see a wide variety of relationships that fit with this general definition of an affiliation of a health department and an academic health professions institution. It's about as broad as and as inclusive as we can make it. It helps our clinical colleagues sometimes when we suggest to them, you know, this is really public health's version of the teaching hospital and medical school partnership. You know, where medical schools rely on hospitals as arenas to teach clinical practice, and indeed many teaching institutions rely on health departments as a place to teach public health practice, to give students exposure in that setting, and of course all of the teaching research and service commitments that tend to go with teaching hospitals can also occur in academic health departments. But really it's a collaborative relationship that's intended to enhance that three-legged stool of training, research, and service. And from the purpose, in terms of the purpose of the Council on Linkages itself, it clearly is intended to strengthen the linkages between these various academic settings and public health practice sites. There are some elements that we've picked up. These are not, we would not want to suggest to you that all of these elements are in place wherever there is an academic health department, but one or more usually are. Certainly there is a relationship of some sort, so that's a constant. Some have formal written partnership agreements of one kind. They're called various things, but they tend to set up a formal structure and a formal relationship and a formal recognition on each side of the practice and academic equation that the other is important. There's usually some sort of collaborative public health education or training going on. Not infrequently, we find joint research projects of one kind or another, and sometimes we find there is a shared provision of public health services, in a sense that the public often is the main supporter of certainly local and state health departments and of many educational institutions, and the sense is that the bang for the buck is increased if we can get these two elements to collaborate together, do a better job of providing service and information. Occasionally we find shared personnel, which may mean not only volunteers, but actually people paid in both settings, to work in both settings. Shared resources, other resources are shared and useful, often local health departments taking advantage of things that universities have to offer, and to some degree vice versa. And occasionally then there is, as I say, compensation for services provided. Health departments, for example, we find may hire an academic institution to help them do a community health survey or diagnosis or so on. Just as one example of the kind of thing that that we find not infrequently. So how do these things generally get started? Generally, they start with some sort of collaborative public health education or training, and it usually means student internships or practicum sites chosen in public health practice settings with the students coming from the academic institution, but then we also find people moving from the practice organization into academia to provide real-world experience in the classroom for students there. And that's often the first sort of connection that occurs. With research, in the area of research, we've learned that many of the first connections come when researchers want to do some work related to the community and they need the support of the local health department in order to do it. So health departments are asked to provide a letter of support for funding proposal. And the university then often wants access to population data that resides in the health department, and so there's an agreement to share that information, often with some then expectation of how that information will be used and what role the health department will play actually in its evaluation and interpretation. And then the shared provision of public health services isn't uncommon either, even including hiring practitioners to work in well baby clinics, prenatal clinics, that sort of thing. So generally those simple beginnings then in many cases lead to more complex arrangements. So in the area of health education and training, it may be then that health departments will ask the academic institution to actually get involved in a formal workforce development training, to really look at the continuing education needs of the health department's staff and to provide some help and support in meeting those needs. And then going the other way, rather than being just volunteers coming in occasionally to lecture in a class or lead an exercise, the academic institution may very well offer faculty appointments to practitioners to make them a more formal member of the faculty and to strengthen the linkage between them. The research projects tends to move to collaborative funding proposals, especially now when there's a little bit more money available that requires both the practice and the academic setting to be involved. That becomes increasingly important. And then to share the data collection and analysis and really have the practitioners play an important role in that usually singular academic approach to evaluating information and reporting on it. And then a shared provision of public health services, and as I say, the community health assessments often are the way that that starts. So what are the benefits of doing all of this? Well, we think this helps address community health needs more effectively. I have to confess, there isn't a whole lot of research supporting this. It's a belief we have. It's not a fact that I can describe for you. We're actually hoping that one of the things we can do is to stimulate some of our public health systems and services research colleagues to take a closer look at this as time goes on and help us understand just what are the important elements that are actually result in improvement in health outcomes, for example. We think this helps build practice-based evidence, certainly improves the use of resources in ways I've already mentioned. We are, I think, quite certain that students who get involved in these practice settings are better prepared for public health practice careers, but I'd also say they're better prepared for clinical careers because the folks who spend time in a health department tend to have a better understanding of what those services are and have a better understanding of, even if they become practitioners, of what services are available for their patients in the communities in which they're working. It certainly supports the recruitment of qualified professionals. Certainly from my own experience, when we have nursing students and medical students rotating through the health department, we get a good early look at these students and their capabilities, and we're able often to recruit by skimming the cream, if you will. We know who's really interested, we know who really applies themselves. Excuse me. And so it allows folks to make, I think, better hires. certainly facilitates lifelong learning, especially for the practitioners. It's nothing like having a bunch of students around asking you questions to keep you going back to the books and staying current, and making sure that you don't look too silly, at least in your responses. And it increases the awareness of public health, as I've said, among particularly our clinical colleagues, which is always a good thing. It now can be helpful in meeting accreditation standards. Certainly within the FAB standards are some suggestions or more almost requirements to be accredited, that you need to have academic connections. So that requirement will, I think, help drive this process a little bit in some interesting ways. And so we believe it improves the public health system and it improves community health, and we're hoping research will bear us out over time. So what does the learning community do then? I think this is an evolving role, but certainly at this point, the way we envision it, we share professional experiences among our members. We try to learn from each other. That's what a learning community's function is, after all. We highlight the materials we have about academic health departments. And we've had some handouts for you. I assume you've all picked up those handouts. There's some of the products that are available as a result of this effort, and they may be useful to you today, this morning, or later at home. The learning community, of course, facilitates this discussion in a number of ways. We try to hold about 4 meetings a year. We do this generally by telephone conference call. And we're starting a style now of having one in-person meeting at the APHA annual meeting. APHA has been very gracious and has told us that we can count on having space during their meetings for the foreseeable future. So that's good, and of course we have online and email communication availability all the time, and we try to offer support to people who are addressing issues related to academic health departments by sharing the expertise of the members of the learning community. And we do that in several ways, including asking our members to fill out an online one-page profile, if you will, and I think that's one of the handouts, is the form there. So we encourage you all, if you're not members, to join and fill out that profile. We don't want your full bibliography or biography. What we really want to know is what experience you've had related to this particular issue, so that people who are facing questions can perhaps peruse those profiles and hopefully find one or more folks with experience in the area of their interest, and we encourage them to get together. And our members have agreed that they would respond to individual inquiries that come from other members, or really just about anyone dealing with this issue. And so we get together and we continue to develop resources that we think might be helpful for folks interested in this topic. So we do have a concept paper, which is that describes the basic elements of the academic health department model, can be helpful I think, ensuring your own understanding of what we're talking about, but also helping others that you may need to talk with about this to get some idea of just what it is we're working with. We always consider this a working draft. It hasn't been changed very recently now, so we may be getting close to something that is at least as close to reality as we can make it at this point. But because we have new members coming on all the time with different experiences, occasionally we've had folks suggest that an alteration would be appropriate for this concept paper, so we leave it as an open draft, but understand we think it's reasonably solid at this point. There's also a bibliography, woefully short, about academic health departments. There just hasn't been that much written. So we're hoping there will be more written, and actually there are, some of you know, there are plans now for the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice in about a year and a half or so to put out a special or a themed edition on academic health departments. So we're hoping that at least will add to the literature and our experience and understanding. And as we discover new materials or new references, certainly if you're aware of any that don't show up on that list, we'd like to know about them, just to be sure that we can capture them. And we've also been collecting partnership or affiliation agreements. These are quite variable, of course. They are also environment dependent, but we collect them just to have them in place so that they're available as models for people who are interested in formalizing these relationships so you can get some sense of what others have done and hopefully might find it helpful for what's going on at your place. Some of the things that we're still developing, of course, is the list of established academic health departments. There is no list anywhere. We're continually finding out about new relationships, some of them quite sophisticated, that we had no idea existed before. So obviously expanding the learning community helps us with this, but we also ask our members to let us know about health departments that aren't represented in our membership list so that we can connect with them and try to bring them on board and get a sense of the depth and breadth of these kinds of relationships. We are developing a list of academic health department roles and responsibilities. This is sort of like the elements sort of thing that may not apply in all places, but at least would give you a sense of the kinds of roles and responsibilities that have been taken on in these arrangements around the country, again, in a way that may inform your own development. An interesting one is competencies for academic health department leaders. If you're really going to have a leader, and we don't necessarily mean the director of health. It's often a nursing director, sometimes an environmental health director, someone else in the department who is the leading champion of this, what are the competencies that that sort of person would need to possess in order to do this well? So that's, I don't know, Kathleen, where would you say that list is? Is that well developed at this point? No, yeah, that's my sense too, that I think we would welcome input into that kind of information. And of course, then other elements, organizational, environmental, that facilitate success or perhaps predict failure of these relationships, particularly as they now relate to primary care partnerships. This may be one of the new areas of involvement for us as we look at better melding of medicine and public health over time in this era of health reform that we hope will continue after next week. So all of these resources are developed through our learning community, and they are available through the Public Health Foundation's Resources and Tools Library, and we'll give you a website for that shortly. We do have an ongoing discussion about these issues. We do have we do utilize the Public Health Foundation Pulse blog, where, you know, there are entries about academic health departments in the community, steps in development, the sorts of things that are listed here. So we encourage you to go there and check in, contribute to it, certainly, if you would like to. We would welcome that. Posts have been written by learning community members, but they wouldn't have to always be written by learning community members. So whether you're a member or not, if you think you have something you can contribute to our understanding of this, that is certainly one mechanism you can use. And there is the website for that. And the personal profiles, say these are relatively short. Again, for the purpose I mentioned of trying to help folks find others who have experiences that may be of value to them as they develop their own efforts. And they are available online by name. So that's that part. Let me ask if there are any questions about that information so far. Very good. Now, what we had thought we might do today is recognize that members of our learning community, as it grows in size, become increasingly diverse in terms of their involvement with academic health departments and the sophistication of the arrangements that they have. So we're finding it increasingly difficult during our meetings, actually, to make things interesting for everybody. Because people who are, of course, very sophisticated at this don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time hearing about how you start an academic health department. But people who really want to know how to get one started aren't particularly interested in how you set up a residency in a health department either. And so the question is becoming for us how we can divide this up and get into smaller group discussions that would be more helpful to the people involved. So we thought that's one thing we might do today, depending on your interests. One way to do this would be for me to meet with those who perhaps are interested in getting an academic health department started and want to talk about some of the issues associated with that. We also, are aware now that academic health departments are increasingly at the center of what's an evolving public health system in an era of health reform. And Ron Bialik has agreed to meet with that group to talk about some of the issues associated with that kind of concern. And Kathleen is quite willing to meet with a group who would really want to focus in on what the learning community could do for them, how we might be able to help in whatever issues you have confronting you back at home. But that's only if people are interested in doing that. So let me ask a couple questions. Let me ask again, how many here now are members of the learning community? So maybe a quarter or so, okay. How many of you would really like to spend some time just talking about how you get all this started and what some of the issues are associated with it? We do have some. All right. Are there others who would like to spend a little time talking about a more sophisticated review of what the details are, what academic health departments might do, and how the learning community might be helpful? Or do some of you like to spend some time with Ron doing that? All right, good. And are there others of you who would just rather talk about the learning community itself and how it might be helpful to you? All right. It looks like we have two groups. What we'd like to do then is spend some time doing that. We'll ask, the usual thing. We'll ask somebody to be willing to write down what the major issues are that come up. And then after a discussion, we'll just come back together briefly, see what those issues are. And then I think Ron, Kathleen, and I would really like to hear from you about what you would like us to do with the learning community in a way that could be helpful to you. That's actually one of the biggest issues for us now. We've spent almost 2 years developing it, characterizing it, essentially establishing it, but now we want to do something more with it. We certainly want to continue with the effort of fostering the development of academic health departments, but we'd also now like to see if there are things that we could actually do that would be helpful to you. Okay, good. So maybe can we just use halves of the room? So let people who want to spend some time with me talking about how one develops an academic health department stay on your right on that side, and the others come over here where Ron is. Kathleen, you can join either one, and we'll just spend some time seeing how this goes. Thank you. What we'd like to do now is just briefly hear from each group. I think there was a recorder in each. Ron, would start with your group. You're the recorder, Cynthia. Yeah. Do you want to come up here? We can. No. Okay.
So I probably, there's no way you can report out and explain the richness of a conversation without taking as long as the conversation would take. So I'll try to just kind of highlight. But we talked a lot about all the things that people are already doing. We introduced ourselves, and people are already sharing people. They're sharing practical experiences, performance improvements. So they talked about doing real-world public health. In other words, they invite all the students over for a day at the health department. And then we talked about whether we were going to talk about whether we focus on accreditation, evidence base, or the collaboration between primary care. And we really didn't do any of those. We worked it all into one big discussion, and that sounds kind of crazy. But we focused a lot on the use of evidence, and that's one of the really big reasons why academic health departments need to exist. We did talk about that the government agencies and the politics get in the way at times of making these formal agreements versus something less formal. But you know, it doesn't have to be something that all the lawyers looked at, right? I mean, and so that's one of the things that we've changed over the years in the whole academic health department and study. We talked about representativity. Boy, I said it 5 times and now I get it. I'm the one that brought that up. Anyway, I haven't had enough coffee this morning. But that being key, that and I actually said, you know, maybe we named it wrong. You know, I mean, maybe we need to be calling the academic units practice-based colleges instead of academic health departments. But the idea that the health department and the university should have some equal footing. In other words, it shouldn't be parasitic on one side or the other. That it should be, you know, we're doing this for you and you're doing this for that, and we're doing this for you, and you know. And it is collaboration and communication that practice should teach practice, not about practice helping academics teach practice. We should be bringing practitioners into our classrooms. And then, and I missed some things, and I apologize. You all can jump in and forget. But we, at the end, we had a really, really good conversation about accountable care organizations, and that providing high quality of care, keeping costs down, applying evidence to service and training. That there's an analogy here. We actually have one person who is that his health department is becoming an accountable care organization with that AAA. We talked about a Brookings Institute site. That have a learning network about healthcare organizations. And Ron finished up by asking a question, would that be helpful to have that conversation? My answer was, why wouldn't we just go to Brookings to do that? And his answer was, that cost $10,000 for an organization to join. So if...
For a nonprofit.
Yeah, that's for a nonprofit. So if Public Health Foundation would be willing to have that would be really great. And the last thing that I would say as someone who's been a part of the learning community for a really long time is that I come to the meeting like this at APHA and I get really fired up about the spin. And I personally will say I have been totally remiss at putting my resources up there, at filling out a profile. And if we really all would do that, I mean, we don't need to travel to San Francisco and then not be able to get back to the East Coast. I just would encourage everybody to do that. And I'm just going to stand up and kind of all and say that I'm going to be my next
we had in some ways a similar discussion, although we were more at a back to the basics. And some of the key points that came up for those of us that are exploring forming academic health departments, that really a melding of cultures that are in many ways very different. Some of the key elements that are needed is, or seem to work best in getting these forms, is to have a champion in both settings. We had a discussion around bringing in the practice partners into the academic community and doing this in a non-bureaucratic way, that really, because of the melding of both cultures, you have to think about the partner and how they're looking at things, and that's critical in order to have this work. And that apparently what often gets lost in this is the intimidation that practitioners can feel in academic culture. So we had some discussions about that, whether it's having them come through with an Office of Public Health Practice, faculty appointments, we had some discussion about that, creative ways to get faculty appointed. Let's see, that generally, with these formalized relationships, these things need to go to the top. They work best if they can go all the way to the top. If the relationships fit into the strategic plan, both of the health department and the academic institutions, the for both sides. Let's see, we did have a brief discussion around the ACOs, and actually Ken brought up that in some areas are moving to accountable care communities, which would certainly seem to be a movement that would want to bring, you know, the researchers, the academic institution, the academy, the health departments, everyone all together. Let's see, a lot of discussion on building on existing elements that are already in place. That's the launching point, you know, taking advantage of alumni, the student practicums that you may already have with the health department. And let's see, that this has to be approached from looking in at what did it for both sides, and one great way to bring a benefit to both sides is sharing positions, such as EPI, that both schools of public health need, and also health departments. And I think that's one of the elements of the
Does somebody want to add to either of those reports? Well, we have just 2 minutes or so by my watch, at least. Let me just quickly ask, what would you all like us at the learning community to do to help you from now on? Anything come to mind that Public Health Foundation, the Council on Initiatives, the Academic Health Department, Learning Community can do to help you move ahead with this?
The suggestion about the accountable care organization.
Mm-hmm.
Some electronic swap to discuss, mm-hmm. share.
Okay.
The comment about top down reminded me that I wonder if there's a way for a network like this to take the conversation to national leaders of some of the academic organizations. In terms of practice organizations, so that, you know, health department directors, deans, public health,
WMC,
and NATO. Right. Yeah. I just learned there, I'm just saying, you should be pushing your leaders to encourage your soldiers to get out and build these relationships. So it's not always us sort of following up, but
Now, I know you've been talking about using social networking and possibilities. I know you've been talking about using possibilities of social networking to share information, and I'm wondering if there might be a way to share certain experiences of different kinds of institutions in subject areas like the ACOs, etc. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has this great little news feature that I get every day. But it might be good, for example, if another institution or academic health department example is doing something that I'd like to know more about, that I can, you know, contact them or just find other examples out there in the United States.
Yes.
Now, I wonder if ASPH might get more involved and bring more to the attention of deans, if there's some way to bring then in on a collaboration. Is there a list of all the academic health departments?
Well, yes, we have a list. It's not a complete list. There is no registry for academic health departments. And ASPH does have a history of involvement with academic health departments. They've actually funded 6 demonstrations, I think. Something like that.
But
so
not all of the academic health departments are with schools.
Well, ASPH has the Dean of Practice Committee, I think, or Council, and so that might be a good place to bring forward.
And maybe even if there's some kind of award structure or something that brings the attention, or I don't know, anything like that.
ASPH is a member of the Council of Ministers, and we want to change the awards.
Been there, done that.
There were monetary awards, and the money went away. But we had annual contests. We gave the awards at the NATO and ESSO annual meeting. it'd be nice to be able to do some more of that. And, by the way, it's, thank you. It's just one, one